Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas. Open Minds Radio is your UFO news authority, presenting evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandro Rojas.
Hello, and welcome to Open Minds Radio. That intro, I thought when Bob Dean did it at first, was kind of slow, but it's really growing on me. I really like it. He's mellow.
Welcome to Open Minds Radio.
We are your UFO news authority, and I am Alejandro Rojas. We have an absolutely brilliant show today. We have Jeff Willis on. We've been keeping with the theme of having UFO Congress guests and speakers on the show, and we continue that with today. Jeff is doing a talk at our Skywatch, which we're going to be having on Friday night, and we'll have Maureen on soon to tell you more about that. But let me tell you more about Jeff. He's been researching UFOs for over 25 years. He's had a ton of sightings, and when he bought his first UFO, his first video camera, it turned out to be a UFO video camera, in 1995, UFO hunting became a full-time activity for him. He's obtained a lot of very cool videos, some of them which have been seen on the documentary Dan Aykroyd Unplugged on UFOs. It's a really cool one. He's been on lots of the TV shows, UFO Hunters. And more recently, he was on the Sci-Fi Channel's Fact or Faked. And while their crew was trying to replicate Jeff's videos, they caught unexplainable UFO videos themselves. So kind of cool. So we'll be talking to Jeff in a little while, but first we've got a very special guest. We have our very own Maureen Ellsbury. Do I say that right?
Yeah, actually? That's right. Ellsbury.
And we're going to ask Maureen about the conference because she's been doing a lot of the organizing. And if you call in to voice your concerns, to yell and scream at someone, that's who you'll be talking to. But she prefers it if you're nice.
Yes. Preferably.
You've had lots of nice people, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of...
So how is the attendance going at the conference?
It's crazy. We just ended early registration today, and the response has been pretty overwhelming. I mean, we're seeing a lot of growth from previous years, and I'm on the phone constantly.
I'm surprised at just how much it's expanding,
right?
How many people there are. It's exciting.
Yeah, and I think it has a lot to do with, you know, the success of Open Minds magazine now, and the advertising we're doing and exposing it to this bigger populace. So we're going to see a lot of new faces.
The people you're talking to today sound pretty excited.
Yeah, in fact, I just kind of neat that we're getting a lot of younger people as well. Talked to a couple of teenagers today that are coming from road tripping down from Utah, and we're thrilled and can't wait and really excited to meet Travis Walton.
Uh-huh. Lots of like cool dudes on the conversation.
Yeah. Okay.
Sweet man, Travis Walton. What kind of events that are going on are you looking forward to?
Well, whole thing. I mean, I hope I'll have a chance to be able to see some of the speakers. I mean, we have just an incredible lineup. Paul Hellyer, and, you know, Jim Mars, Richard Dolan, all these people are really great. So I'm looking forward to seeing pretty much everyone. But then I'm pretty excited for the Skywatch event on Friday night because that's going to be really cool. We're doing that in conjunction with Fort McDowell Adventures. So they're Friday night's Frank's event. So it'll be neat because we'll be out in the middle of the desert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll be talking to Jeff about that today because he is the king in the area of getting UFO videos, so hopefully he'll be able to bring some good UFO juju and we'll all get to cool sightings.
Yeah, you never know what can see.
And then what do you think makes this year special?
You know, well, a lot of things. There's a lot of change going on. The fact that it's its first year in the Phoenix area, and it's the 20th annual event. So this conference has been going strong for 20 years, and I think that's pretty impressive. And it's the first year we're hosting it. So it's, and with the line of us speakers, it's going to be a good event.
Mm-hmm. And you were a friend of Nikki and the Browns,
right?
Just like I am. And so it's an honor to be able to carry on that legacy.
Right, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. Anything else you wanted to add? I think
No, I just hope everyone is able to come out, and if you're not, then we'll have the DVDs for sale on the website immediately after the event. So looking forward to seeing everyone there in February.
Cool. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Maureen. A little other news going on. A couple of radio interviews that we're going to be doing. February 4th, Through the Keyhole with Karen Dolan. We'll be talking about the conference there, and that'll be a lot of fun. Karen Dolan is Richard Dolan, or Richard Dolan is Karen Dolan's not-so-better half. I don't know how to say that to compliment them both, but they're both awesome people, and Karen does a radio show. Really cool, so that's going to be a lot of fun. And then on the 5th, I'll be on Eye on the Sky with Dee Andrews, and I've been on her show before, and she's a lot of fun also. So that'll be cool. We'll be talking more about the conference, and we're all really excited about how well everything is going. We're just, you know, overwhelmed. I mean, who knew that this thing would really grow to the size that it has and that we'd have such an incredible response? So we're certainly overwhelmed and very satisfied, and it's going to be a lot of fun. One of the exciting things about our website is that we update it on a regular basis with UFO news. And these are headlines, stories all around the world that talk about UFOs. And even more exciting is that every week we get joined by Jason McClellan, and he shares some of these headlines with us. It's always a treat for me, and I know the listeners love it too. Hello, Jason.
Hello, Alejandro. You are full of, I don't know what you're full of. It's very flattering, my friend. Hello and greetings, everyone. This is your Open Minds News Brief for Monday, January 24th, 2011. Humans are now less afraid of meeting extraterrestrials than we were previously. That's according to an article published on Science and Religion Today. The article's author, Albert Harrison, an emeritus professor of psychology at the University of California, Davis, believes that there is an anything-can-happen mentality in Western society, thanks to ever-developing science and technology. Harrison points out that we live in a culture where television programs, books, video games, toys, sweatshirts, and so much more encourage us to think about ET. And it is the constant exposure to these things that opens people's minds to the possibility of extraterrestrial life.
Mm-hmm.
Got a point. Everywhere you look, and I don't know if it's because I'm immersed in this field and you're immersed in this field, we deal with it every day. So everywhere I look, I see things extraterrestrial, alien-themed, mm-hmm. everywhere I look.
But everything's really, I think it's just such an easy, creative kind of outlet. Like, if you have something strange and weird and foreign and you want to integrate it in our world or regular environment, somehow you call it kind of extraterrestrial. Like Superman, for instance. You want to have this cool guy who can fly around and be invincible, but how do you explain that he has all these powers? It's easy. You just say he's an extraterrestrial.
That's right.
So it's been a part of culture for at least modern-wise for a while. I guess since we've discovered there are other planets out there. But for me, what's made me less afraid of extraterrestrials is lots of meditation.
I think a lot of people have a lot of different answers for that. But
yeah.
I think the guy's probably generally right.
Yeah, probably. I mean, you get a lot of people, especially kids. Even though they see a lot of the TV shows, kids get real excited. I mean, when you talk to kids about this stuff, a lot of them are, oh, I want to meet an alien. And, you know, maybe they're thinking of the Disney shows with the cute little aliens.
I know a lot of kids who call them aliens.
Aliens, yeah.
Aliens.
Yeah, yeah.
And I probably did when I was a kid, too. And mm-hmm. it was kind of confusing with E.T. because the boy's name is Elliot.
Yeah.
So you have Elliot and Alien.
Yeah, Elliot and E.T. the Alien.
On a similar topic, filmmaker George Lucas is among those who believe the world is coming to an end in 2012. According to actor Seth Rogen, Lucas recently spent more than 20 minutes telling him how 2012 will be the end of the world. Recalling the encounter, Rogen told the Toronto Sun, George Lucas sits down and seriously proceeds to talk for around 25 minutes about how he thinks the world is going to end in the year 2012. Like, for real, he thinks it. I'm not going to impersonate Seth Rogen, but imagine some super stoned person telling this story.
Yeah. For real.
Steven Spielberg was apparently also present for the discussion, but according to Rogan, Spielberg simply rolled his eyes and said, "My nerdy friend won't shut up. I'm sorry."
I wonder, yeah, I mean, I think Spielberg is referring to his nerdy friend George Lucas.
That is correct.
And I've heard kind of stories about him being kind of weird. It's very interesting that he would be so into that stuff. Maybe, you know, when this conversation happened, it wasn't just Seth Rogen who was smoking the joint. You know, maybe George Lucas was partaking a bit.
That's certainly possible. And, you know, I can't believe it 100% because it is coming from Seth Rogen.
Yeah, he could be just joking around.
Right.
But who knows? We'll have to ask him one day.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
When he comes to the office.
Yeah, he'll probably be at the conference.
Yeah.
A Scottish man reported seeing a pear-shaped UFO earlier this month. He was sitting in his car when he saw two low-flying strange orange lights, one bigger than the other. At first, he thought it was a police helicopter, but when he got out of his car, he saw a large, pear-shaped, bubble-type thing that made no noise. The witness watched as the UFO suddenly shot straight up. The East Kilbride area of Scotland, where this pear-shaped UFO was spotted, has become a minor UFO hotspot with regular sightings. I like this description of pear-shaped.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I have to commend the UK for their creative descriptions of UFO shapes. They've had their hamburger UFOs last year. They had their Dudley Dorito UFO.
Mm-hmm. And the States is flying saucer. Triangle.
Triangle.
Boring. Dorito.
Pear. Cigar. That's, I guess cigar is kind of creative. I like that one.
But it's an old one.
Yeah.
Now, I saw on the stream here this cheesy picture that you have for that with a pear in the sky. Did you make that? Or was that on
one? That's the real photo, Alejandro. There was actually a pear in the sky.
Yeah.
No. Don't criticize my graphics there.
It's cute.
No, I couldn't find an actual photo of this. I don't know if the guy took a photo. There was nothing that said he got out with his camera, but he got out of his car and it shot straight up, so I don't think he had time to take a picture.
Yeah. That's how it happens a lot of the times.
But I felt that to best represent a pear-shaped UFO, what's better than a pear?
Mm-hmm. You know what? I'll bet in the future, this is another prediction from me. I've had a lot of predictions lately, and they've all come true. And if you think about it.
Should I call you Stanley?
This one is one day we'll probably have these little cameras in our eyeballs where we'll be able to blink or, like, hit the back side of our head, and it'll snap a picture of whatever we see. It's like a screenshot of everything we see.
As scary as it is to say, I don't think that's too far off.
It's going to happen.
There's that teacher in New York who had a camera implanted in the back of his head.
Really? Oh, my gosh. I did not hear that story.
For the sake of art.
Oh, wow.
But, yes, implanting cameras into human tissue is here, my friend.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And if the aliens don't do it, we will.
I'm even more right than I thought.
That's scary.
Yeah.
Police in Newtown, Connecticut saw five mysterious lights in the sky a couple weeks ago. There's video of these lights on YouTube. And after watching the video, a paranormal investigator from the Smoking Gun Research Agency determined the lights were Chinese lanterns. And I just watched this video myself, and it's very cool because we have done a couple of experiments now with Chinese lanterns and taken lots of video, lots of photos. And the video of these lights, these five lights, look exactly like our videos looked.
Mm-hmm.
So for once, I agree with the person saying that, yes, they're Chinese lanterns.
Yep, we're Chinese
lanterns. They were
just
these slow-moving, glowing lights through the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Not anything shooting up or doing 90-degree turns or things that some people try to blame on Chinese lanterns, which we have discovered Chinese lanterns don't behave that way, and you wouldn't think they would. But
right, and they don't move around a whole lot in the wind, and they don't last that long.
Right.
Discoveries that we've made.
Yeah, and I think they even had people come forward in this particular case saying that somebody very close released 40 of these lanterns in memory of a friend or something like that.
Yep. So there's an abundance of these lanterns out there, and they're pretty fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, the UFO chick in the chat is saying they're expensive, which they are. And they are pretty fun, though.
I have to disagree with UFO chick. She clearly doesn't know what she's talking about.
Well, maybe in British pounds.
Maybe. No, there are many different kinds of lanterns.
And yeah.
Some are pricey and some are not, but I guess it depends on how you want to spend your money.
Yeah.
I guess I can think of many other ways to spend my 50 yeah. bucks or less, but they are fun, and we found out a lot by launching these things, watching them in the air. And something that surprised me was the fact that you can't see these things come in a variety of colors. We launched a multi-pack of lanterns, and you can't distinguish the colors when they're in the sky at night.
Yeah, the brightness of the flame is so bright it overpowers whatever color
right.
The balloon is, and so they all look the flame color, the yellowy kind of orange.
Right, and
flame.
We wanted to see that because, you know, some of these reports, people report mysterious green lights in the sky or blue lights in the sky. So we launched these to see if Chinese lanterns might do that. You might see that, but you just see the red, orange glow from the fire.
And next Christmas, I'll make this vow that we will launch the Santa Claus Chinese lanterns.
We will launch
many
Santa
Clauses.
Yes, these things are crazy.
We'll get some pictures for
they
you.
They come in all sorts of varieties of lanterns. They make them for everything. They make footballs. They make one for every sports team. They've got pumpkins for Halloween. Pretty crazy.
Yep, giant pumpkins.
I think one even has a giant alien head.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to launch a Santa Claus myself. But.
Yeah, the alien head you probably can't see very well. But the Santa Claus looks like you can.
It looks like Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of cool.
His head. But then kids might be screaming and crying because they're like, ah, Santa Claus's dismembered head is floating around in the sky.
They might cry if he starts crashing. He burns out.
Yeah. But hopefully we won't scare any kids.
But they look pretty happy in the sky. So.
Yeah.
There's kind of a strange story. A scientist believes there will be two suns in the sky, possibly by 2012. Dr. Brad Carter, senior lecturer of physics at the University of Southern Queensland, thinks one of the brightest stars in the sky is collapsing. He says the star might run out of fuel, and if it does, it could go supernova at any time. If that happens, a second sun would be visible on the sky for at least a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. And the name of that star? Betelgeuse, Betelgeuse, Betelgeuse.
Yes.
Yep.
There is a name for the star, but I'm not going to try to pronounce it.
It's Betelgeuse. I think he said it's Betelgeuse.
Did he really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, he gave it a different name, but okay.
Huh. Well, in the story I read, it was Betelgeuse. But, I think I found that interesting. When I first saw the headline, I thought it was, there were some conspiracy rumors that they were going to try to nuke Jupiter to turn Jupiter into another sun because our sun was going to die or something like that. And you can find that in the conspiracy annals. And actually, 2010, I think, the movie, or if you read those books, the 2000 series, like the 2001 stuff, the aliens were taking Jupiter and turning it into a sun in order to create a habitable planet, which was one of the moons of Jupiter, I think Europa, which was kind of funny. So I thought it had to do with Jupiter or something, which is kind of scary. 2010, someone in the chat told me. But thank goodness it's a lot less scary than I thought. It's Betelgeuse. And it's far enough away where it won't fry us all.
That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. But we might have daylight for 2 weeks or something.
Yeah, that's right. This guy said we wouldn't have night, and that would kind of be awful.
Mm-hmm.
It's like those poor people living in Alaska.
Yeah, like that movie about that. What was that one where he couldn't sleep because all the daylight and he was going crazy, the cop?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Somebody in the chat will answer that for us.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there are a lot of conspiracies surrounding or related to the sun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's constant discussion about satellite imagery and stuff from the sun. And
yeah, SOHO cameras.
Right. People who claim to see UFOs and stuff.
Some of those pictures look interesting, but it's just, I guess, hard to say.
Well, and we're not going there anytime soon, so.
Yeah. It's a little warm.
Yeah.
Warmer than Phoenix in the summer, believe it or not.
Yeah. Warm here is the perfect type of warm. The sun, that's getting a little crazy.
Yeah. You die.
Yep. That is it for the news. Remember to check out these stories and more at openminds.tv, your source for UFO-related news. I'm Jason McClellan, your Open Minds news correspondent, and you've been briefed. And believe me, it's better to be briefed than debriefed.
I agree.
Excellent. Back to you, Alejandro.
Now, someone in the chat's trying to figure out the name of the movie, and, you know, you can help, but it's the movie where it's about when you can't go to sleep. That's what it's named, whatever you call that, and I can't remember what that's called. Regardless, let's talk about some of the other articles we have on the website. Some cool stuff. We put up another UFO case files revealed, so Michael Schrat goes and he looks at some of the case files and the UFO archives of some of the big major UFO reporting groups, and then he makes imagery where he shows what the UFO would have looked like in the setting, so you kind of have this great illustration that's somewhat realistic of the UFO. So we put another one of those up. Also, I wrote a couple stories, one of them on the most popular YouTube UFO video, which is called UFO Haiti, and it's got like over 15 million views. You probably know what I'm talking about. I remember when it came out and people were really excited. See, here's why I thought it was fake when it came out. The sound sounded like an audio loop because you had this girl getting all excited and everything with the palm trees and stuff. That was one of the major ones for me, let alone it looked really almost too good to be true, but you know, you never know with that. The real thing will probably look too good to be true. Turns out, though, you know, this thing became such a big thing on the internet that the LA Times looked into it. And it was their cyber somebody who looked into it. And I've got a link to that story on here. They were actually able to track down who made it and talk to the person. And the guy said he didn't want to give his real name. But essentially that he was kind of experimenting with a movie that he was going to make, and he worked on a lot of Hollywood movies. He's like this expert at this sort of thing. And so he was just playing around, made this video to see what would happen on the internet, and sure enough, it went crazy and it got really popular. So the LA Times guy said, well, you got to prove that it's you, that you're the one who made this video. So he said, okay, he'd make one similar and put it online. And he made this real cute one. It's called now Naughty Grannies, I think he calls it. And you can see the link again on this story where you see the UFO that looks just like the ones that were in Haiti, but it's floating over this mailbox in Paris. So it's like this miniature one. And then it pans over to these old ladies who are playing with a remote control to kind of pretend like it's a little remote control UFO. It's a really cute video that he put together. So finally the mystery was solved and everybody found out that it wasn't real. So there's just some background. I just wanted to put together all the info in one story that was kind of concise so you guys can all see all the different videos that were related and see the background of this story. So when it comes across, because even to this day, people run across that story and they get amazed and then they email it to all their friends and, oh my God, look at this UFO video. And then one of their buddies knows that, hey, that's actually a few years old and it's not real. Sorry. Or you can, like I said in the story, like I do, you know, you can either burst their bubble and tell them, look at this link. Sorry, that's not real. Or you can let them live in their little UFO bliss for a while. And some people, you know, it's better just to say, all right. Great video. Thanks. Other stories. I also wrote just today one on the Dreamy Draw Dam. And this is really interesting because I knew the backstory about this Dreamy Draw Dam thing, but I didn't know where it came from until I did a little more research on it. And the Dreamy Draw Dam is a dam, a small one, that's in this desert area outside of Phoenix. And it does look kind of weird because it's not like it's holding any body of water, whereas usually dams are next to lakes and hold lakes and stuff like that. But so a lot of people speculate that it was unnecessary, and this legend came that there was a UFO under it. I did some research and talked with buddies and got some help. And, you know, in the Frank Scully book, which I was familiar with, they did talk about a UFO in Arizona, a UFO crash in Arizona, where a couple of bodies were found. I then talked to some people and was told, which I didn't remember, that Tim Good had written a book in Above Top Secret about this case also, except for he called it the Paradise Valley UFO crash. Paradise Valley is actually sort of far away from where he found a witness in, well, about 20 miles in Cave Creek, who said that's where this crash happened, that this guy with his hunting buddies saw this UFO being recovered by the Air Force. And then later, he said years later, he saw them doing some construction and stuff, and he believed they were burying the UFO. But that was up like 20 miles north of all of this. And somehow it seems as though people think that this dam, because it's kind of this dam in the middle of the desert, is where they buried this UFO. So that's the story. We went out and we interviewed a ranger to ask, you know, what's up with this dam? Why do you have this weird dam in the middle of the desert? And he told us why. It is because it's by this mountain peak and there is a lot of watershed there, and the park does go underwater, and it keeps that water from going down into the neighborhoods and sweeping away all of these beautiful homes, which would be unfortunate. Paradise Valley, by the way, is this beautiful area in Scottsdale with these incredible buildings up on the sides of some of these mountains. And it's very near the beautiful area where we are having our UFO Congress. Very, very exciting. Also, I don't think Jason mentioned this one. I can't remember now, but I'll say it again. No, I don't think so. The crop circle in Indonesia. It's been a busy day. This is a new story as of today. This really incredible looking crop circle in Indonesia. Of course, people are saying, oh, it's probably man-made, but Indonesia doesn't really get crop circles. And of course, Doug and Dave, there's only one of them left, and I doubt that he flew down to Indonesia to make this crop circle. So it is a big mystery, and I hope that some researchers can get out there and they can figure out some more around it, because it looks like it's a very pretty crop circle, somewhat a complex crop circle, and it looks like some of those that seem to be actually mysterious and not man-made, just like the ones in England. Speaking of England, hopefully next week we will have our good buddy Ross Hemsworth on the show, an English UFO conspiracy kind of guy. And then we're also trying to get Ben Hansen from Fact or Faked onto the radio show. He was going to do next week, but then he kind of had to. They're shooting. The week after next, he's going to be in Argentina, so they're shooting for the show. So he's kind of having problems scheduling around that. But he is going to be at the conference signing signatures. Also at the conference, our guest for tonight, which I believe we have on the line, Jeff Willis, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Cool. I know.
Doing well.
Yeah, it's cool to be out here now. You know, we got to talk, I think, a little bit before I moved out here, but now we're out in the same area, and I get to see you sometimes, which is a lot of fun. And just like you were on the internet when we corresponded that way, you're a very nice and great person, Jeff.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I'd love to stop by the office over there and visit you guys, you know, at least a couple times a year, and show some good brand new footage, you know, here and there whenever I can get them.
Yeah, it's incredible you have so much footage. And really looking at it, it seems like one of the first pieces of footage that you had that got big was one of the daylight UFO videos you got. Was this like in the mid-90s?
Yeah, this was 1997, mm-hmm. A little bit after the Phoenix Lights incident. The very same year as the Phoenix Lights incident, 1997. March 13th, 1997, we shot some orbs over there by South Mountain. But later on throughout that year, I also was able to catch many, many daylight sightings that year, 1997.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the videos that I shot in 1997 was featured on Channel 10 News here in Phoenix. And it, as like you were saying, it was a daylight sighting of what looked to me and what it looks like on video is a dome-shaped object with two domes, actually. You know, they have the rod in the middle and the two domes on the very top, and then it had, like, three balls of light underneath it, like maybe some sort of propulsion system. And it, the way it moved was amazing because it goes so fast. And a lot, back in those days, those type of objects that I captured on tape, a lot of people referred to those as rods because they were moving so quickly. But a lot of other researchers, like John Burrow at the time, you know, was saying, no, these aren't rods. These are craft that are out in the air, you know. And some of them, of course, could be rods, you know. But the research kind of shifted to higher shutter speeds to debunk any bugs or anything that could be debunked. You know, people just advanced their shutter speed to a higher level, and then that canceled out anything and that was close to the video camera. And of course, you always have to zoom to infinity, so you're filming stuff that's high in the sky.
Right. And now this daylight video, it was the 97, was that when the video was taken that they used on the Dan Aykroyd documentary?
They used quite a few clips from me. They used about five or six clips of mine throughout the show that spread throughout the documentary. And a lot of them were taken from my first three DVDs, UFOs Over Phoenix, you know, Volume 1 through 3, and they wanted to use some footage for their, of course, for Dan Aykroyd's documentary that was coming out, and I had already, you know, shot a lot of daylight stuff, you know, through the late 90s, and they were kind of interested in some of that stuff, and I also showed them some of the latest videos that I shot, and they added a few of those into the documentary as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some cool videos, like the one you were talking about with a dome-shaped object. It's almost like a saucer on its side.
Yeah, that was later. That was in 2003 when I shot that one. And at first when I saw that, I thought, well, it looks like, you know, maybe that could be some sort of balloon or something. And I zoomed into it, and I still couldn't really figure out what it was. And by the time it got over my house, it went like the opposite direction. It like did a weird U-turn move over the top of my house, and I'm still taping it as it's getting farther and farther away. But at that point, I wasn't sure what I got. And a lot of people were interested in that clip. It was used most recently on Ancient Aliens episode 3, I believe it was. And that just re-aired the other night, too. They showed that, my clips and that. I wasn't sure if you saw that or not.
No, I haven't seen that one. I've seen some of them, but I don't think I've seen that one yet. I kind of don't get many cable channels anymore because I've been so busy and everything. I just decided I don't watch them. I'm not going to pay for them. So unfortunately, I don't get some of those channels anymore. But luckily, you can watch them online and stuff.
Oh, yeah. YouTube's got plenty.
Yeah, YouTube. And some of them are putting them up on some of those other TV type shows or websites. But I guess getting to you and your experience, this started for you early on in your life, like in your teenage years, to have so many sightings?
It started way earlier than that, really.
Oh, really?
When I was about 5 or 6 years old, I was, you know, right before I was going to sleep, something was like grabbed a hold of me, actually grabbed my hand when I was going to sleep, and I wasn't asleep yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, you know, I was pretty freaked out, and you know, you don't know what to think when you're a little kid and something like that happens. So,
yeah.
You know, the next day I asked my parents, I said, you know, what would you think, or, you know, if I told you that I thought somebody, you know, grabbed me in my sleep last night or before I was going to sleep. And they said it was probably just your guardian angel or, like God, you know, trying to make, you know, it seemed like it was angels or something like that.
Hmm.
So I was kind of you know, I was comforted. It wasn't a bad experience, really. It was more like I know that there's not supposed to be someone in the room, and there's someone in the room, basically, something like that, you know. And it was not, you know, burglars or anything like that. So, but you know, after that, it was kind of strange because throughout my education, you know, my first education in elementary school, looking through the library in that elementary school, I was kind of drawn to the books about the paranormal. Like, you know, I saw a few Bigfoot books that I had checked out with some UFO books. And that's when I first saw the Billy Meyer photographs, was in those books. And I was only about like 7 years old when I first saw those photos, you know, and I was kind of drawn to them, not to say that they're, you know, I'm not sure exactly what is going on with Billy Meyer's case, but when you see those photographs in a real clear photographs of UFOs in a book when you're a small kid, it kind of makes you want to challenge what you've been taught, you know, in the regular education, you know, throughout your entire education.
Right.
You know, it's a challenge.
And now, yeah, you get a lot of videos. So your bio talks about how in 95 is when you bought your first camera. But did you buy it for the sole purpose of recording a lot of UFOs that you were seeing at the time?
Yeah, really, it was, because in the early 80s, I had a 35 millimeter still photo, you know, still camera, 35 millimeter, and that, you know, we developed our own film in high school, you know, and using enlargers to blow up pictures and stuff like that in photo class throughout high school and junior high. And I had taken pictures with my 35 millimeter camera of high, you know, white dots high in the sky that I knew weren't balloons or planes. So I was already able to start photographing UFOs by the time I was like 14 or 15 when I first got my camera. It wasn't long after I think I got it when I was 12 or 13, but I had gotten my first UFO pictures by the time I was like 13 or 14 or 15. And I also, you know, throughout those years, three or four still shots. And I also saw a low UFO before I got that camera, about a, you know, a couple of years before I got that camera in 1980. This was back in where I used to live in Bellevue, Washington, right outside Seattle. And there was a small domed cone-shaped UFO that was not too high above the trees in the neighborhood that was going very slow. And I had spotted it when I was riding my bike through the woods. I saw it and I tried to chase it and it disappeared. I didn't get, you know, very close to it, but it was a good visual for at least 30 seconds, 40 seconds. And that was the closest UFO I had seen. That was actually the first UFO that I had seen. And after that is when I started taking the pictures. But the pictures were of objects that were farther away. This thing, you could have thrown a rock at it.
Wow. And how big do you think it was?
It was probably, I would say, you take two good size sports utility vehicles, you know, next to each other, something like that. You know, maybe just two or three, you know. But it wasn't too big, but the way that it flew, it was just hovering and just kind of wobbling there over the houses, not too high up, like 30, 40 feet, you know, right, you know, like real low. And at first I thought, when I saw it, maybe the wind picked up somebody's, you know, trampoline or, you know, something, flipped it up there, but there was no wind. So, you know, I made a note of that. There's no wind, and it doesn't look like it's caught in, you know, like debris flying up there, you know. It's just like sitting there, you know, like barely moving, you know. And after that, you know, and then with the experience that I had earlier when I was a kid in the bedroom, and these pictures that I've been seeing in these books, you know, that's kind of how it all escalated to 1995 when I got the first video camera. And I had lived in Phoenix, Arizona since 1988. So I hadn't been here that long when I got the camera, you know, a few years, you know. So, you know, after that, it just evolved into video footage of these things.
So it definitely sounds like you're a person who has more UFO sightings than the average person out there. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's just looking for them is the thing. I mean, mm-hmm. if you spend, you know, let's say you spend 20 hours a week looking, like at the sky, at different angles, you know, if you can put that much time into it, you won't be long until you start taping good stuff. If you have some good equipment right next to you, like some really good binoculars, you know, if you can afford, you know, to buy a little thing, you know, a few things, you can document some of your sightings pretty easily
mm-hmm.
with, you know, with some video cameras, some nice video cameras and some binoculars, good, real nice power, high power binoculars.
So have people, I'm sure people have suggested to you that perhaps it's you that maybe these things are attracted to you a bit. Have you ever thought of that?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, there could be a lot of, well, when you're videotaping multiple objects over years of a, you know, a time frame, you know, a lot of different things falling, you know, into what these things could be. You know, of course, I've had, like I said, some eerie, weird experiences, not just the one I was telling you about, my earliest one, but a few other ones up into the point of before I moved to Phoenix. And it makes you wonder if some of these things you videotape are the same, you know, related to the experiences that you've mm-hmm. had throughout your life, the ones that you can't explain, you know. But then, of course, you're videotaping all kinds of stuff. So it's not related to just one type of sighting. If you've noticed on any of my videotapes, it seems like every single object is different than the last one. There's never one that's the same as the other one.
Yeah, that's one thing I was going to bring up about your videos, especially, is that the objects are so varied in shape.
Right. You know, it's really a funny thing because we have a lot of common UFOs where, you know, you get that, like a white dot high in the sky and you get high power lenses on it and no one can figure it out, but it's not a star and it's not a planet
mm-hmm.
and it's not a balloon and it's not a plane and it's something, you know, that has people baffled. And those ones show up over and over again, and lots of people take the same ones. And, you know, then we have other ones that are, I'm sure you're familiar with this, the ones at night that are just a certain color of red
mm-hmm.
that look kind of like a flare, but it's not a flare. It moves. Those are reported, you know, all over the valley. It's one of the most common ones. But what I do is I use the Peter Davenport's website with, you know, the Arizona page, because you can see, you know, a lot of common, you know, flaps that happen in each area of the certain kinds of UFOs I'm telling you about. Like, you'll see a flap of these white ones over a period of time, and then you'll notice at night the red UFO, and people describing it the same thing. I don't know if you ever go through the Arizona page on Davenport's site, but it gives you kind of an awareness of where to look for them if you want to tape these things, a video, you know, or have an investigation in a certain area. We used the Peter Davenport page back in 1997 when I was running a different site with another guy, another UFO investigator that's out of the field right now. The website doesn't exist anymore either. A lot of people that are listening probably know exactly what I'm talking about, but we use the Davenport site to pinpoint and videotape multiple red light sightings through 98 all the way through like year 2001. And we had a few news investigators that were out there, and this was on Channel 10, Channel 12, Channel 5. This was on all the channels. You know, so Arizona goes through these waves of flaps, and this was not related to the Phoenix Lights incident at all. This was multiple sightings for Gilbert, Chandler, Mesa. It's there's patterns and there's waves and there's you know, there's different types of sightings.
Right, and that's interesting that you have used, because that's then something that anybody out there could do, because what you're talking about is Peter Davenport's New Fork site, and where they track UFO sightings for all over the country. You could do this, I guess, with the MUFON one too, and that way you can. It's National UFO, or no, it's not.
Reporting Center.
Yeah, the National UFO Reporting Center, and what is it? Just NUFOC.net, NUFOC, I think. Or New Fork.
I can check.
But anyway, that way you could look for trends to find out. Yeah, NewFork.org, N-U-F-O-R-C.org. You could track sightings in your area, and you're saying that way then you can go nowhere to go to look for UFOs, and that's work for you.
Exactly. People always ask me, how do you tape so many UFOs? You know, where do you go to see all this? And I could, you know, tell you, you know, 99% of them, I just go out in my backyard and look around for a little while, and something will show up, you know. So.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we got hundreds of hours of stuff that, you know, when you go through it, you know, you take the best of the best, because a lot of stuff could be, you know, we rule out a lot of stuff, too, when we shoot as sky watchers. You know, you start to, you know, figure out which ones are balloons or spider webs. A lot of stuff in early UFOs, a lot of videos turned out to be balloons or spider webs. And you know, a lot of these rods turned out to be insects and stuff like that. So you have to have a real skeptical eye. And I've earned a real kind of rough reputation as being pretty critical on, you know, any footage, let alone my own. And you know, you have to go over it and rule it out, really, before you can, you know,
tell people that it's something.
Yeah, or even know anything about it. Because even when it turns out to be a true UFO that you've taped, you know, you still don't know what that thing is.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the 90s, you said when you were doing the red UFO tracking that you talked to a lot of press and that they were interested.
Right.
How did they react?
Well, a lot of them were, you know, honest, and they had good reports, and others, they made the person have to look like a crazy person or a fool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was working as a news editor, actually, during the time on a site called UFOVideo.com. It doesn't exist anymore. And a guy that ran the site, Tom King, I worked for him, and it was kind of like a little UFO news site with videos, and all the sky watchers contribute their videos and stuff like that. And Tom was like ridiculed on one of the Channel 12 did a whole story about the red light sightings, and they did an interview on Tom, and they completely ridiculed him and called him crazy and everything. And shortly after that, you know, he pulled the plug on his website and kind of got out of the field. I don't know why, but it could have been because of poor news reporting. But it seemed like they opened up a little bit to the Phoenix Lights over the years. If you notice, the reporting on it hasn't been so skeptical, and they don't really call us crazy, you know, as much as they used to. So maybe the word's getting out that it could be, you know, something to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, and you do have to have thick skin, definitely, in this field, especially when you're dealing with the press. I know you've experienced that.
Oh yeah. I think a few local newscasts that I've been on, I've been really good, you know, real good stories with my footage. But then there's been a couple of them where they seem like, you know, it's going to be really, you know, really good article or a good show, and then they bring in a skeptic or a debunker to kind of debunk your. I don't know if you saw that one from Channel 10. It was kind of funny because this guy from the National Skeptics Association or something like that. Mm-hmm. I'd never even heard of a group like that.
Right.
But they featured my footage on there, and then they bring this guy in, and he said that one of my videos looked like a skydiving planes, which is completely ludicrous.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at the footage, you know, they were showing what he said and then showing the footage. They were like almost making fun of what he said. Like they were more on my side. Mm-hmm. And the way they ended the clips of the news in my videos, they were making me and my footage more believable than the skeptic, like turning the story on him.
Wow.
So he
cool.
got in a few jabs at first, but then all of a sudden they slammed him with all this, you know, great footage, you know, saying, yeah, you know, there's something to it, because otherwise, you know, we wouldn't have all this video of this stuff, you know. So.
Well, that's pretty cool. Have you found that you've been able to convince other people, other skeptics or other people who you were surprised that you were able to convince with your video?
Oh, yeah, there's always people that are impressed with the video, but what makes them a believer is actually showing them, you know, that they can see stuff themselves if
yeah.
they really want it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I also wanted to mention, I got a, you know, of course, I don't know if you mentioned that my website's UFOsoverPhoenix.com,
mm-hmm.
but I have a new website that's only a few months old. It's called UFOfootage.net, and there is a new DVD on there of a few Skywatchers that I know that have been sending me footage, some really good footage over the last, like, 10 years, and I was able to make this video and sell this. It also has on the website, it's got various UFO download clips from all over the world, from different sightings, from, you know, different places. So I'm kind of building that site up a little bit as a new you know, a new forum for different UFO topics and stuff like that. There is a chat forum there for people that want to discuss you know, UFOs and stuff like that too.
Cool, yeah, and someone was asking, you know, where can I see more of these videos, and UFOfootage.net is where they can go.
Yeah, and if you wanted to see all my, you know, video downloads that I, you know, not all of them, but, you know, quite a few of them, there's about 70 of them. If you go to UFOsoverPhoenix.com, and then it's the second button down where it says Jeff's UFO footage,
mm-hmm.
you go there, and there's a lot of clips you can download. I have so many to, you know, I'd like to put up another couple hundred, but, you know, it takes so much time, and then
right.
I have plenty of bandwidth to do it, and, you know, for my site. I have enough space on there to do it. So eventually, a little at a time,
mm-hmm.
you know, keep checking back, because, you know, I almost got 100 downloads just on that one page. So, you know, when I get some time, I'll be able to put another 30 or 40 up there here and there. So keep checking back.
I wanted to ask about the Phoenix Lights also. So I don't know if you ever are getting footage of that, but where were you and how did, because you were in the area at that time, right?
Yeah, we taped some orbs. There was lots of reports in the South Mountain area,
mm-hmm.
of lights that were in that area, but the March 13th thing is a whole other thing altogether, because you know, originally the Maryland National Guard said that they dropped flares over the Barry Goldwater Range at 10 o'clock. And then a whole group of other people said, no, that's not what we saw. We saw a triangular-shaped object at 8 o'clock earlier that night.
Mm-hmm.
So you have two different events going on, and one of them very well could have been the flares over South Mountain at 10 o'clock, and the other thing was the triangle that people saw earlier at 8 that didn't even go over towards South Mountain. It went a different direction. So there is a you know, military base back there behind South Mountain, Barry Goldwater Range, and they do drop flares all the time back there. So you know, a lot
have
of
you
people,
seen that before? Have you seen them dropping flares?
Yeah, we actually did we had some reports of stuff back there back in, I think it was like late 90s, like 98 or 97.
Mm-hmm.
And we went out there, and with this old website that I was working with, We went out and did an investigation on Maricopa Road back there behind South Mount, and sure enough, we were able to videotape the military dropping flares just south of there from Barry Goldwater. And a matter of fact, a couple of them were right over us on Maricopa Road, which is off of the military base, and we put high power on it. We saw the parachute and everything flying off of the...
That's what I was thinking, because, I mean, Barry Goldwater is pretty far from South Mountain, and you have in between Indian Reservation, so they must...
Yeah, it was definitely on the Indian Reservation, because we were right on Maricopa Road, and we were on the north side of Maricopa Road, and the flare was in the desert right over our head, and so they're definitely off target, so, you know, I don't understand... why they're doing that or what the diversion is. Do you have any idea? I heard a few theories about how military planes drop a lot of their cargo and stuff like that just to get rid of it.
No, I mean, I've heard only when there's like trouble and they need to lighten their load, but I certainly haven't heard of that like purposefully over any populated or non-military areas, because you'd think they would get in a lot of trouble for that. Someone could get hurt.
Yeah, I heard a pilot say that sometimes military jets and planes, they unload all their flares sometimes just to get rid of them. I don't know if that's true.
I could see them doing that for fun, because I know they do a lot of goofy stuff just for fun. I mean, a lot of these guys are pretty young, and just like anybody goofing around at work that... they'll do that kind of thing.
Yeah, but that was a continuing occurrence, because we were getting reports up Maricopa Road, and we went out there twice, and there was another incident that ended up being flares too, and that was out by white tanks out there.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting some reports in a certain area, and we sat up and we saw some flares, so. You know, a lot of people think that those orbs are flares, that they're dropping are people think they're orbs and UFOs, especially right there by South Mountain. Because
right.
You have that perfect, spot where everybody's, looking for them right there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that what people are seeing over there and taping aren't UFOs, because, of course, we've had a long run-in of UFOs interested in military bases over the years, too. So,
now, one of your videos from May of 2005 is a pretty popular one, where it looks like over a mountain, some lights in a cloud that kind of go on and off. And this is a video that people can go watch on that footage page of Jeff's at UFOsOverPhoenix.com. Now, that, I guess, yeah, do some people say that's flares, and where was that?
Well, that was over on Pinnacle Peak and, 59th Avenue. There's a little park up there, Thunderbird Park,
okay. And
there's a little hiking area, and we went up there, and we were doing an investigation again from a person that was seeing lights near his house, which is right near that area. So we went up in the mountain and right there, and we were having a little interview about his sighting that he had. And he had some good video, too, that was very similar to what I shot up there. And so after he was done with his interview, all of a sudden those lights show up, and I just zoomed in and was lucky enough to get the footage. And then right after the footage went away, and we saw the F-15s come, and from a different direction and kind of circle the area and then leave like they were interested or had seen those objects. And the other person that was with me at the time was Pat Uskert from UFO Hunters. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
But the reason why he was up there is because we were shooting the pilot for UFO Hunters. We were doing a documentary series which actually ended up becoming UFO Hunters. So it was kind of unique because here we're doing a documentary, which was going to be a two-hour DVD that we were going to release on Pat's side and my side. And when he got back to LA and edited the DVD together, he broke it up into a few different parts and called it UFO Road Trip. And they put it, on a DVD and took it over to History Channel. And they decided that, him and Pat took Bill Burns over there, and they decided to do the series based on, our pilot.
Come
on. So that was kind of cool how that turned out. But people say, skeptics will say those are just flares, being dropped out of a military plane or something like that. Well, The only problem with that is over, the area that's over is all houses. And there's no, it's like you were saying before, at least when we did our investigation on Maricopa Road, the flares were over the Indian reservation where there's no houses.
Mm-hmm.
It was all open desert. There was nothing there. So I don't really see, how they could drop those flares over those houses, because they're all neighborhoods there. They're all houses for miles
right.
and miles. So are you allowed to do something like that over houses? So I don't think
right.
so. So I called them the next day, Luke Air Force Base, the next day, and Pat turned on the camera and videotaped me talking on the phone to Luke, and they said that they didn't drop flares in that area, and they don't know what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
But they said they were running routine training flights, and so I guess that would explain the jets that flew, and circled the area after the lights appeared. But to me, with it and on the video, it looks like the lights are disappearing from one part of the sky and then reappearing in the other part of the sky, as if they're going so fast they're like streaking across the sky. You almost see like a streak if you look real close,
mm-hmm.
like it's flying fast, like that fast. So they look like individual objects too. It doesn't look like one. At first, you think that it's a triangle-shaped object that's all one craft, and maybe it can become that with those lights all connecting together. But the way that I see it after years of studying that and looking at that, it looks like they're individual lights, like four, what starts out as four lights, and then one on the right disappears, and another light reappears on the far left. So it's almost like you can almost see the streak. Like I was saying before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really cool video. I've always really liked this video. I'm looking at it again now, and because it is so mysterious. And like you said, that they don't last long. I mean, they
yeah.
appear and disappear in a row, and one, further out. So,
when it all
like
disappears.
Flares.
Yeah, I was just going to say, when they all disappear, then all of a sudden it appears way far away up into the right, up into the left hand, the screen, all of a sudden, it's like, what in the world, and you don't see any blinking lights above where those lights are, like the airplanes dropping flares
yeah.
where you can't see them. You don't see that really. So I don't know people could. You can't drop flares over houses, I know that, and you can't release, chafe. I've heard another person say that it could be chafe. Are you familiar with that stuff?
But definitely stuff that you don't really want to be dropping over neighborhoods.
Yeah, you don't do that around.
Uh-huh.
Especially in Phoenix, where it's dry like that in the middle of fire season.
You know what else is exciting about this video, because I didn't know exactly where it was before, is that what you videotaped there probably could be seen from Fort McDowell, where we're going to have our Skywatch coming up here next month.
Oh, yeah. That's great. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's kind of not too far from that area.
Yeah, it's going to be real fun to do that, and I'm looking forward to showing a lot of video clips that we're talking about tonight, and hopefully people will really see, maybe even get to see something out there.
Mm-hmm.
As I was thinking before, maybe this thing will show up again.
Yeah. Now, when you go out looking, and it sounds like you go out for long periods of time, which makes sense. Now, what is your success rate, I guess?
Well, it comes in waves. It's very in seasons too, which is kind of weird. Usually after March is usually the best time during the day. Coming up, you know, right now is not really a good time because I noticed for day sightings anyways. Nighttime sightings seem to have better luck this time of year for night sightings, but during the days it just doesn't seem to work out this time of year. And I don't know why, but the day sightings start getting better after March, and the night sightings, you know, I only get, you know, maybe one a year, you know, anyways of those. So it's just kind of it's sporadic. You never really know when you're going to get a good, you know, video. The latest one, night sighting, is actually really a good triangular sighting that I have. And it's on UFOsAreFamous.com, the homepage, and it's the new video called 2/19/2010. It's right under the Race to Witch Mountain banner, right underneath that. You'll see where it says Jeff shoots 2/19/2010. What is it's a night, like, triangle piece. And like I said, I get a really good nighttime triangle, like, once a year. I mean, that's if I'm lucky, I get two, you know. Those don't come around. A real good ones like that don't come around too often. So, like you were saying before, the ratio of time you put into it before it pays off is quite a bit of skywatching for night footage. For day footage, it's not like that. For day footage, you can go outside and look at the sky for about 4 or 5 hours, and you should be able to see at least one unexplained high-altitude you know, phenomenon, or even a low altitude one, but generally they're more high altitude during the day. And when you get like high powered video lenses and stuff like that on these things, you can see there's no strings. You know, the true, you know, UFOs turn out to be either white or black object with no string or anything attached to it, and they appear to be kind of a fuzzy structure. Like, even though you have a defined video image of it, it's like kind of soft and fuzzy, the structure of these objects. And I don't know really why that is. Maybe it's just how it shows up on video. But when they're closer, you know, they're more metallic looking, where you get like a real hard edge of, you know. A few of my videos on my video page, of the black objects are like that. You'll notice how they appear to be like metallic looking, you know, and then others are more, like I said before, soft, like almost like a blurry surface, you know?
Yeah, I've had myself actually on two occasions sightings of the really high white UFOs that look like just tiny balls that are really hard to see during the day. But, yeah, that seem very high in the air. So I've seen that, too. The ones that you say are fairly common. In fact, I knew someone who took videos of that a couple times, and I was skeptical when she first told me she took a lot of these videos. And then I saw them, and I thought they were interesting. And, you know, lo and behold, she was able to take me out. And after a few days, we were able to have her own sighting, or at least I was able to have a sighting with her of that. So that was pretty cool. But
and
like you
really
said,
I was just going to mention, we, you know, back in 97, 98, 99, my first couple of years with the video camera, I documented, you know, I got like 10 VHS tapes full of video, you know, that was transferred from my camera of daylight sightings. And a lot of them turn out to be caught and real high up, and some of it turns out to be balloons, of course, and a lot of them where you see like a object that looks like a boomerang or something like that high in the sky, and a lot of times with the high power we discovered, a lot of those objects are balloons tied together from like a car lot or something that, you know, somebody just bought a brand new car or something, but
Yeah.
You know, and they let, but so we noticed with other videos coming in through that time period that there was a lot of misidentification too. So when you really go through the stuff with the fine tooth comb, you'll find that people do shoot the real boomerang daylight objects and see the real orbs too. When you get tons and tons of video, you know, you have to really look at every single frame and, you know, try to be skeptical and rule it out before you can say, yeah, that's definitely
really scrutinizing,
you know, UFO, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I, like I said, I, you know, we shot, me and other sky watchers shoot a lot of stuff that we go through and, you know, after we weed it all out, there's the real thing. So it is, there is something there. But there is also a lot of people that you know, that are seeing other stuff. And that's good, though, because you're going to see when, like you're saying, your friend, she's got probably quite a few real UFO images. And when you're sky watching a lot, you're going to get the other stuff, too. So that's a good thing. It just means that you're out there getting what you're supposed to get.
Mm-hmm. Now, your experience with Fact or Fake, they essentially came out here and looked at some of your video and then tried to reproduce some of it. And that's what you were part of, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And it was
kind of scary because I didn't really know what the show was all about. These guys called and they're like, yeah, we want you to do, you know, we've seen your video on other, you know, shows and all that stuff. And we want, you know, you to do this show. And I know the executive producer that kind of talked me into it, but, you know, because he's done some other, you know, shows that, you know, that I was on before.
Is that Ben Hansen?
No.
Or someone else?
Bob Kvyat.
Oh, Bob Kvyat, okay.
Yeah, and I was on, you know, that, I was on the Amp Mobile video with Paranormal News with April Scott, which was Bob's production, and then I was on World's Best Evidence Caught on Tape, which was Bob's production. And
so I didn't realize he was part of the Fact or Fake.
Yeah, he is. He's a content producer. So he calls me and he says, I'm with this show from Sci-Fi and we want to have you on the show. And I was great, you know, great, Bob, thanks. So, you know, I'm doing my third show for Bob, you know. And so I didn't know too much about it. And I thought it was, you know, another one of these UFO documentaries, you know. And so they do the shoot, and I knew they were going to, you know, try to see, you know, what it was. You know, I knew that part about it, you know. So that didn't really bother me too much because I had done a show a couple years before this show called X-Testers that was on Discovery Channel. And the host of that show was actually Gilligan's son from Gilligan's Island, Patrick Denver. Yeah, Patrick Denver was the host of the show with some other guy. And their show was very similar. They went out and tried to fake footage, and my footage was on that one. They tried to fake it, and it didn't work. And so I wasn't too worried about it with this other show because, you know, it was the same video clip that the other guys tried to, find, you know, how it was done, and they couldn't do it. So, you know, why not, you know? And so, but when I did see the show on TV, I noticed that it was a lot more, that I took a big risk because I didn't realize how serious the show, you know, these people were to actually calling out someone and actually finding if it's fake, to actually come out and actually debunk them and actually destroy that person's career, so to speak. Because I'm sure that after watching the show for these last two seasons, you've seen a lot of footage and a lot of people's careers go up in flames because of this show and these people, you know. So when they vindicated my footage and they couldn't, you know, they couldn't fake it, and you know, they basically even at the end had my voice on what they call a lie detector test or a stress voice analysis, and they concluded that I was telling the truth through my whole interview and what I shot was not faked and it was definitely something unknown. And while they were trying to fake my footage, they actually videotaped real UFOs too in the same area that I shot my footage. So it kind of vindicated the whole case, and it was the first episode of the season, of the brand new season, you know, the, you know, premiere
right.
episode. So it kind of was great because, you know, that footage was also featured worldwide on Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell, and that footage was also, like I said, on X-Testers. That didn't become too wildly popular or broadcast at the time. So this new show got a little bit more teeth and a little bit more viewership, actually. So.
Right. Yeah, I think it was really exciting for people. I think people were skeptical about the show and the concept of the show to debunk things. And you have television shows like Mythbusters, where at the end, a lot of times it comes down to not necessarily proving or disproving, but kind of their own gut reaction that, well, we pretty much proved it, so we pretty much debunked it, you know. No, and it's well, it's no gray area. It's black or white, debunked or not, and they'll call it debunked when they haven't completely done that. And then with your footage.
Go ahead. Yes.
Oh, just with your footage, you know, you were kind of wondering how they were going to call it because they were really trying hard to reproduce this, and then they couldn't do it. And then, boom, and then they got their own video.
Well, the funny thing about it is I didn't when I did it, you know, I didn't, you know, I thought that it was going to be, you know, UFO related, you know, to the point where they're out there to prove that there's UFOs, not disprove them.
Uh-huh.
So I was going into it thinking something different. And then also at the, they do something a little bit different than Mythbusters. I think I haven't seen Mythbusters too many times, but with Fact or Fake, like I was saying before, at the end of the show, they put my voice on a lie detector.
Right.
So they almost try to do a personal attack if they can get one.
Right.
And I mean, I've seen a few of these guys, did you see the Jonathan Reed episode with the fake aliens?
No, I didn't.
Dennis? Oh, well, they put him on the lie detector and they just tore him up.
Yeah.
They put the, instead of, you know, like they did with me on the show,
right.
How they bring up the lie detector stuff after they presented the case as pretty much being real, you know, but
uh-huh.
with him, they wanted to counter his lies right as soon as he said them. So they set up the machine so when he said a lie, it lit up that he was lying, and then they came back with a response like, why did you say that? It's, this machine saying that you're lying right now. And so it was like more, even more of a personal attack. So they're getting like more, I think they were getting more vicious, that show, like really trying to debunk all the hoaxes out there. And that's, in a good way, that's good, but on the bad end of it is, what if what you taped was real and they duplicated it almost perfect and
mm-hmm.
then debunked you on television, and the fact remained that you had still taped a real, genuine, bona fide UFO.
Yeah.
So just because you can fake something doesn't mean that what you shot wasn't real and what
that's
you said it was.
That's a great point, too, because especially with, the garage special effects that can happen, you know, a kid with a nice computer, you know, my MacBook right here with some good software, I could get and create some cool special effects if I knew how to do that. Unfortunately,
right.
I don't. And you can fake a lot of people, like those videos, the UFO Haiti video we were talking about earlier. That happens. That doesn't mean that every UFO video is fake out there just because you can create a fake UFO video.
Yeah, and that show Fact or Fake, it deals with that. I'm sure, you know, every episode you see, they always bring up one or two CG clips, and they're like,
mm-hmm.
give me a break, you know, we can
yeah.
see, you know, that, you know, that's a fake from a mile away, you know.
Yeah, I know so, that my buddy Chuck Zukowski was on the show talking about cattle mutilations, and he was really frustrated because they did come up with kind of a cheesy answer,
you know,
for that one.
They attempted to actually brush the entire phenomenon under the rug with this ridiculous explanation because they can't really account, even though it could, that could, you know, punch a hole in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
It can't solve the ones where you have trace cases on this animal from high heat and other stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some definite research that proves that there's something to it that's definitely unknown, for sure.
Right. And
Linda, no, Linda's got all that information.
Yeah, that's when I really want to press him on when we are supposed to have Ben Hansen from the show on soon, and he's going to be at the conference, and I want to really ask him about that one and kind of champion that cause there, because yeah, they talked about skin breaking and bloating, and of course that's not a precise cut, nor does it explain the organs that are removed. So.
Also, and did you know, did the show where they did try to fake the moon landing? Did you see that episode?
No,
Okay, well, their whole point was, you know, at the end, do you think it was fake? None of them would say it was fake. They all thought it was real, that the moon landing was real. So, on one end, they know that, and they faked it pretty good. It looked almost identical to it. So, on one hand, they also know. It's just because they can fake something doesn't mean something, isn't real at the same time.
Right,
so
yeah.
They weren't there to go out on a limb and call that a hoax. And
even
I think that that would probably end
it.
Their career if they did that, too. So.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's a really good point, too, that even though they reproduced the moon landing video, they didn't call it a hoax like they're doing with some of the other stuff. So pretty interesting, that show, and I think you did. You know, it was pretty risky to go on that show, and but it's great the way it turned out.
Yeah,
you couldn't
they
hope
actually
for anything
want,
better.
Yeah, they actually want me to do another one for their fourth season. Their third season is going to air here sometime in March here coming up, and they want me to do a shoot for the fourth season already and come on there again, and I'm kind of nervous this time.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll happen or not, but I'll keep you updated and informed on that for
sure. No, I think for them, they're so excited about the footage, the UFO footage that they got, because I had talked to him even recently, and they're just so floored and excited about that I think that you're pretty special to them, that they hold you in high regard now after that.
Oh, thanks. I just try to, capture the best. That's one thing with videotaping UFOs for me. It's always been trying to top the last or best, clip that I ever had. So I'll be trying to get a better clip, And that's pretty much how I've documented so many different types of, clips. And I did notice that, more people are seeing them. It seems like than before, but at the same time, my videotape footage is kind of tapered down over the years. Instead of taping maybe 20 or 30 a year, I've come down to maybe only like, 5 or 10 a year, for some reason. I don't know really why that is. It's just, they just don't seem to be as much as how it used to be.
Well, now that I'm really in this field, too, I have not had a sighting for quite some time. It kind of seems similar, and I often wonder. I mean, it's pretty far out there kind of concept, but there is sort of a because I've seen some correlations that seem to be more than just coincidence in that, possibly sightings happen around groups of people or for people who just have to be exposed to this sort of thing more than others, like you and I, who already understand that these things are around and have had our experience, so we don't need it as much as others, possibly.
Yeah, everybody in the UFO field starts out in the UFO field differently, and they're involved for different reasons and have different experiences than other, people. So everybody in there that's, so to speak, bit by the UFO bug, a lot of times it becomes like a major obsession. And the people that videotape and take pictures of UFOs, that's when their obsession just, they watch so much the sky, so much that they actually were able to prove themselves right by just having an interest. That's the thing about the UFO phenomenon is the UFO phenomenon will find you if you just take an interest in it. I mean, it's like a living, breathing thing. I mean, these, entities will come to you if you show an interest. That's all they're looking for,
Yeah, I kind of feel that way, because I had been in this arena researching for quite some time before I had my first sighting, but then I did, and then I had some regular sightings for a period of time that were sometimes pretty exciting. Now, which of your video clips is your favorite?
Well, I got lots of favorites, of course, but I kind of I like the one on, if you go to my video page, UFOsareFoenix.com/Jeff/footage downloads. The one off of my homepage on the second button down, you can go scroll down a little bit, and I like this newer crust, white object. It's a cluster that I shot in 2009. It's 1/31/2009. Mm-hmm. It's one of my most recent clusters that I shot, and I kind of like that because I hadn't shot a cluster for quite a few years, and the last cluster I shot was black. Well, they were black UFOs. They weren't white ones. And I kind of like that one because it's a multiple sighting. And then one of my favorites is, if you scroll down, it's 4/20/2006. And that's piece of night footage, too. And I really like that one because the lights do really amazing stuff. And they move different. And it's really neat because that sighting starts out as two white lights at night, and then one of them disappears, and then all of a sudden three or four lighted objects seem to be being ejected from that last light. Like all of a sudden four lights appear, and as each light is appearing, it looks like, if you look real closely at it, it looks like each new light that's coming on is being ejected out of this single light that's left over, you know, from the beginning of the sighting when there was actually two lights. So it shapes itself into like a boomerang shape of lights after that, and then it gets real bright red at the top, and then the entire thing just goes out and disappears. So I really like that one. That's kind of neat. And, of course, the one you were talking about, the May 12th one, that's really a great piece too.
Mm-hmm. But it's a cool one, especially the lighting, because it's that kind of twilight, and it's got a kind of a mood there. It kind of seems overcast, and yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, and there's a few of them where it actually shoots another one out of the bottom of it. Down, if you scroll down to near the bottom of those videos, it's a 10/5/2000 footage, and it shows a white object that ejects another object out. And I've gotten a lot of those over the years, but they're very, very unusual, though, because you don't really know what to think about that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember that one now that I found it. Yeah, that one's a really weird one. That's a neat one.
And then there's some couple newer ones. One on 10/18/2008. Even though that was just a couple of years ago, those were taped. That was taped at one of my newer condos that I've lived in recently, and that's kind of a lower, like a good sighting because it's like a low UFO. You know, you'll see at the end of the video how the UFO is low towards the bottom of the house almost.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like almost landing or something, but it's far away. You know, so it's kind of hard to see what it is, but.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. We're pretty much out of time. And if people want to come and say hi and see some of these videos, we're going to be you're going to be at the Congress at our Skywatch.
Mm-hmm.
And then
I will.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I'm also going to be vending there as well. So.
Right.
So
perfect.
I'll be there.
In our vendor area all week, and then. You need to come out to my house in Maricopa. I got great skies out there, and we'll do some sky watching.
Oh, that'd be great. I get reports from Maricopa all the time, too.
Cool.
At least a couple times a month.
Cool. We'll definitely have to plan it. That'll be fun.
Thank you, Open Minds crew. Well, I thank Open Minds and Maureen and all you guys, and I look forward to seeing you guys out there this year.
All right. Thank you very much. Cool. We will see you there. It's going to be a lot of fun. Thanks, Jeff. Coming up next week, I don't know, either Ross Hemsworth, hopefully, or another great guest. So stay tuned, and we'll get that information up on the website soon. We are out of time. Thank you for listening to the show tonight, and thank you for listening to Open Minds Radio. Don't forget to visit openminds.tv for more news. Talk to you next week.